plugs at the Defense Finance and Accounting Service, DFAS, are fake numbers employees use to fill holes in the books of the various parts of DOD. Reuters News Service reports many parts of the Pentagon use plugs, the official name is unsubstantiated change actions, to make their books balance with Treasury's books. Major General Arnold Panaro, U.S. Marine Corps retired as Chief Executive Officer of the Panaro Group and a member of the Defense Business Board. He has been following problems at DFAS for a long time. He says the news service isn't the only organization with an eye on DFAS.
This is actually an area that not only the Defense Business Board has looked at, but I've done several previous analyses for Secretary of Defense, one back in 1997 for Secretary Bill Cohen, and looking at these defense agencies and particularly DFAS. So if you wanted to start back in 1997, they've made a lot of progress since then. However, as the Reuters story and your expert reporting has pointed out, they still have a very, very long way to go. So we shouldn't be looking as much at how far they've come, but we should be looking forward at how far they have to go. And the problem that you basically have is it's not really the people as much, because the people that work at DFAS, just like in the rest of the Pentagon, they come to work every day trying to do the best job they can and do what's right. But we don't give them processes or procedures or IT systems where they can actually be successful. So DFAS, like a lot of other elements of the Department of Defense, is mired in antiquated procedures, antiquated technology, and that do not measure up to world-class business standards that we use in modern business to deal with these kind of issues.
Well, let's talk about the people part of this equation, sir, because that strikes me as I read through this story and consider the conversations you and I have had in the past and the reporting Federal News Radio has done on this issue. That's a big part of the problem. You talked about reporting on this for Secretary Cohen in 1997, and off the top of my head, we've had how many SecDefs since then? We've had how many people in key elements overseeing this since then? And that's not to say that that's a problem. That's the nature of our political system. But that strikes me as a tremendous difference between what we'd expect from a private sector organization and what we can reasonably expect from the Department of Defense.
Spot on. I mean, the problem is accountability. In the private sector, we hold people accountable, and we focus on outputs, not inputs. We look on results, not on how hard people work or how hard they try or how good their intent is. And people are held accountable, and if they don't measure up, they're gone. In the federal government and in Congress, they focus on inputs. How much money? All the debate right now is, well, how big is the defense top line going to be? Rather, what are we getting for what we spend? And then, are we getting the bang for the buck for the taxpayers and the warfighters that we should? And clearly, in this case, we are not. And one reason is because they are not spending their own money. They're spending the taxpayers' money, and they're not as careful. But the lack of accountability in government is a huge issue, and we see it on everything from the website and the rollout of the new health care plan. We see it in the inability of the Defense Contract Audit Administration. I mean, now this is the Department of Defense top audit outfit. And according to the Government Accountability Office and DOD's IG, the DCAA, which audits all contractors, doesn't meet generally acceptable audit standards. We call them GAAP rules. So the problem you have is in places like DFAS, they are not using world-class business practices that are used in the private sector. And people will say, well, look at the millions and millions and millions of transactions. If you go to ADP or you go to any of these automated payroll processing and payment systems that you have in places like General Electric, $158 billion company, or Walmart, even larger, or ExxonMobil, they do hundreds of millions of transactions and they don't have these issues.
Why has it been so difficult for the Pentagon to apply those concepts in a public sector model? Because, I mean, you're not the first person to point this out, sir, and people have said over the years we should try to work toward that goal, toward that vision, and yet we still seem so far away.
The more you streamline, the more you reduce overhead, the more you reduce layers of management, the fewer jobs you have. A lot of this is tied to job protection and job retention. And so the incentives in the business world, you incent people by their performance, and the for-profit companies, obviously, you need to return profit to the shareholders. We don't have the right incentives in government. How do you incent people to basically save the taxpayers' money, be more accurate in the way they do their accounting, and reduce overhead and reduce layers of management? You're basically incenting them to basically get rid of their job.
That's an issue that you've looked at in your role on the Defense Business Board.
Correct.
Tell me about the recommendations that you made over the years and the progress, if any, that you've seen on those.
Well, as I said, there's some progress, and people work at it hard every day. It's pick and shovel work. I mean, you're not going to come in with a wand and solve all these problems all at one fell swoop. On the other hand, they really haven't made – again, it's how far we have to go to dramatically improve the result compared to where we are today. One of the reasons is because the Department of Defense does not know and does not track what it costs them to do activities. They don't know what the fully burdened cost of an active duty personnel is. They don't know what the fully burdened cost of a defense civilian. They don't know the full cost of contractors or for the people that work in the federally funded research and development centers. So they don't know it, and they don't track it, so that they don't know what it's costing them. Two, they don't have good systems to tell them then how much it takes to process, say, a payroll. You know, back in Secretary Cohen's day, the cost per payroll cycle at DFAS was $12 per person per payroll cycle. ADP was doing it for like 10 cents. Now, DFAS has gotten a heck of a lot better when it comes to payroll processing. It's certainly, you know, and they've gotten the cost down. They've actually closed a lot of DFAS centers and things of that nature. But the starting point, Francis, is you have to know what things cost. If you don't know that, you're not going to be able to make the improvements.
Now, Beth McGrath, the outgoing Deputy Chief Management Officer at the Pentagon, has told me on a number of occasions about her efforts to try to institute a cost culture at the Pentagon. That's the name she's attached to it.
Right.
Do you have a sense that that effort is on its way to success or successful? Because that strikes me that it's getting right at the heart of what you're talking about.
No, absolutely not. There is no progress in that area at all. And frankly, it's not reasonable to expect that people that are career government employees are going to know how to basically make progress in this area, because they don't have any perspective or training or background in world-class management practices that are applicable in government, because they've spent their entire career in government, and government is basically a bureaucracy.
So the term cost culture, though, General, implies to me that that is at least the effort that the Pentagon is trying to make, because exactly what you're talking about is the cultural influence and the way that you grow up and the way that you learn how to do your job and the way that
right.
you learn about the incentives. So if they're at least talking about a cost culture, that implies to me that they at least have the idea of the direction they want to go. They have a vision, and it becomes a matter of how they're executing the vision.
Road to hell is paved with good intentions. I would not be so cynical if I hadn't been watching this for 40 years. I've heard a lot of this before, and I just don't see you. It's one thing to state a goal and objective, but it's another thing to have change management processes where you actually implement those changes. You don't make changes in something as large and complex as the Pentagon by making statements and giving speeches and put out directives. You have to basically crank it into their incentive structure, their accountability structure. And again, till they know what it costs to do certain activities, you can't make a lot of progress in this area. So that's the first thing they need to do. The second thing they need to do, the business board and others have talked about this, they've got to get control of their overhead. They have too many indirects, meaning too much tail, and too little tooth, which is the warfighting. The tooth and the sequester, by the way, doesn't help any of these issues we just talked about. It makes every one of them worse. It reinforces all the worst trends that we have going in the Department of Defense right now. And so we are basically continuing to grow the overhead. Defense-wide spending has gone from 5% to 20% of the budget in the last 10 years, and we continue to cut the warfighting or combat forces, army divisions, combatant ships, tactical fighters. And if we can stay on the course we're on right now, with the overhead continuing to grow, with the inefficiencies in the way they do these activities like at DFAS and DCAA and other activities, and if the deferred compensation and health care costs continue to rise between now and 2021 and the sequester stays in effect, we're going to cut the warfighting forces of the Department of Defense by 50%. And that will be a force that is too small, less ready, less capable, and will not meet our national security needs. But we'll have plenty of people working, you know, at DFAS.
That's Major General Arnold Panaro, U.S. Marine Corps retired Chief Executive Officer of the Panaro Group and member of the Defense Business Board. You can read the Reuters story about DFAS that we talked about, and you can hear my conversation with General Panaro later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Pentagon Solutions with General Panaro continues next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Pentagon Solutions continues now with Major General Arnold Panaro. Inventory and accounting problems at the Defense Logistics Agency caused that organization to spend a lot more than it has to. As of the end of fiscal 2012, the agency had $733 million worth of inventory on order that already had enough of, according to Reuters. General Panaro says with the readiness problems that the Joint Chiefs of Staff tell Congress about, they could buy a lot of readiness with $733 million.
Amen. And the Admiral, to his great credit, that's running DLA now, and this shows you why he's trying to do the right thing. He made a statement that he had $7 billion worth of excess inventory that they didn't need. I saw another news media report where he was quoted as saying it was $14 billion. How do you – in DLA, by the way, when you ask people who are our largest defense contractors to think of great companies like Lockheed or Raytheon or Boeing or General Dynamics, wrong. The largest defense contractor is the Defense Logistics Agency. It does $48 billion of business with the Department of Defense every year, and yet it's not run as a business. It's run with government practices, not modern business practices. That's how you end up buying $7 or $14 billion worth of goods that you don't need. Walmart doesn't buy $14 billion worth of stuff they can't sell or don't need.
Is this another incentive problem, General, or is there a deeper structure issue there?
I think it all ties to the same thing. Is we focus on inputs, not outputs. Everybody's always focused on how much money do I get in my budget and justifying their budget and keeping all their people. Number two, you don't have accountability. So in the last 10 years, we've canceled over $50 billion worth of defense procurements that didn't work. Not one person has been fired. Not one person has been held accountable. So not only, you know, do we not have the modern management information systems that we need in a lot of areas that would help people like the Admiral at DLA do what he absolutely wants to do, but we don't have the right incentives, we don't have accountability, and nothing bad ever happens to anybody when things go wrong. So how do you fix problems like that? Congress is not doing proper oversight. Congress used to do oversight in all these areas, and they really have lost their focus on oversight. We should have end strengths for the overhead. We should cap the number of people that work at OSD, at the joint staff, at the defense agencies, the combatant commands, and in these headquarters area. You just need to put the kind of same kind of tight controls on government that we have in the business world.
The congressional oversight piece of this, General, what's been the distraction? Is it just the idea of all of the crises-to-crises management is taking the attention of members away from this oversight, or is there some deeper issue here?
I think there's a deeper issue there. I think we've seen a significant deterioration in the ability of the Congress as the institution to do its work either on time or in an effective way. And so it's not the individuals, but it's just like the people. So the individual, I guarantee you, one of the DFAS employees that's processing an invoice or processing a payment, they're working hard, they're doing everything they think can do right, but they work within a broader system at DFAS that doesn't let their work shine. In the Congress, you have individuals that are dedicated, working hard, but as an institution, they don't pass budgets anymore, they don't pass authorization bills, they don't pass appropriation bills. The last time we had all appropriation bills passed before the beginning of the fiscal year was like 10 years ago, and then it was 10 years before that when they hit that record again. And when you only work from like Tuesday afternoon to Thursday morning, and you work on, you know, something as large as our government, you can't get the work done in that period of time. So Congress is a institution is just as ineffective in their outputs as is some elements of the federal government in the executive branch. So I think, you know, we got to paint a big bullseye on the Congress as well for not doing their job.
What's Congress's role in changing the incentive structure that you talked about earlier, sir?
Well, Congress is the board of directors, and they are the ones under the Constitution, and they're always beating their chest and saying, hey, under the Constitution, we have the power of the purse. Well, with that comes an obligation to make sure the government's money, the taxpayers' money, is being spent wisely. They're not doing that. So that's their they actually have a broader constitutional obligation in these areas, because they are the ones that are, no money can be spent in the federal government if it doesn't come through Congress at an appropriation. And of course, here we are again looking like we're going to have another year-long continuing resolution, which is the most inefficient and ineffective way to run a government, because it doesn't allow you to make adjustments for things where they need to be increased or things where they need to be decreased. It reduces a CR. There's no oversight in a CR. So let's say the Appropriation Committee, Defense Appropriations Subcommittee, which does yeoman's work every year, they go through, they have the hearings, they do the oversight, they make recommendations, they make changes. None of that gets included in a CR. So their whole year's worth of work down the tubes. So, you know, that's got to be fixed as well.
Beginning of our conversation, General, you talked about the fact that we should look at the issues of DFAS as covered in this Reuters story in context, and that they're making improvement, but still a lot of work to be done. Should we be satisfied with the trajectory? I mean, given the huge...
No, absolutely not. No, the airspeed and altitude that this plane is taking off in terms of improving oversight and improving the output of the dollars we spend in the Pentagon is on a trajectory that's going to crash. It's not going to have a safe landing, because every trend that I see right now and all the analytical work I've done, we continue to cut the warfighting capability and the warfighting forces of our military, and we continue to keep too large a tail. So we are absolutely, even though progress is being made, death spiral into a crash landing.
Friend of mine who, like you, is a retired uniformed officer, sir, told me yesterday, if 2014 statement of budgetary resources was a stock, I'd be short. You agree with that?
I guarantee you, I wouldn't buy any stock in anything that was running of the government. In other words, if it was a stock that was running government, you can bet your bips that stock will be continuing to lose value on the course we're on right now.
If the Pentagon doesn't make a statement of budgetary resources in 2014, then being auditable in 2017 is out of the question, isn't it?
Well, I think most people that follow this, and again, Bob Hale, the OSD comptroller, there's no one more dedicated to meeting this goal than he is, and he's a professional comptroller. He's probably, you know, one of the most experienced people we've ever had working this. So it's not the individuals, but here's the thing. People would be shocked if they actually make the fully audit. You know, no one's going to be one bit surprised if they miss another deadline. People are going to have heart attacks if they make it. They're not going to believe it.
Is the Coburn Mansion bill helpful or harmful to that would try to hold the Pentagon responsible, accountable if they don't make that deadline?
My view is there's got to be more accountability put in all levels of government. There's got to be more accountability in the Congress. There's got to be more accountability in the executive branch. So anything that adds more teeth to accountability is a good thing, not a bad thing. But then if they do it, then somebody's got to act on it. I mean, I'm a firm believer in the United States Navy and United States Marine Corps theory of command, and that is, if you're the captain of a ship, or you're a captain of a submarine, or you're the head of a Marine battalion or regiment, and something goes bad in your unit, I guarantee you the Navy and Marine Corps, they fire those people by lunchtime. Now, they will go back later and take a look and see, okay, did we make the right decision? Should we reconsider? But they don't mess around when it comes to those kind of situations. But the rest of the government, and of course, in the bureaucracy part of the Navy and the Marine Corps, people are not held accountable. But we need to apply the same standards to the bureaucracy and the tail part of our government that we apply to the warfighting part of our government, where we hold people accountable and hold them responsible.